Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
Okay, and this week we're talking about PlayStation Now requiring 5 megabits connection speed for a good experience.
Just derision.
All right, okay. Sherlock and Watson are trapped by the Doyle estate. A new game is coming from the Left 4 Dead creators, and 4.2 million PS4s have been sold since its launch. And then we're going to have our feature, which is our worst gaming hang-ups.
But first, PlayStation Now, which is, you know, what Gaikai essentially has now morphed into, now that, you know, Sony have kind of come full circle with the whole service. According to news reports, it will require a 5 megabit connection speed minimum for a good experience.
It will also require breaking the laws of physics.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't get the whole obsession with cloud gaming. I just really don't. We've had this thing, let's all use terminals, let's have big mainframes running things in an office somewhere, and let's log in our terminals at home.
Sure, and this has been... It kind of makes sense for business-to-business sort of like computing needs, or anywhere in a business, because basically the kind of way that licensing for software and stuff
works,
that you're having to mass buy hardware as a corporation, the idea of having dummy terminals is obviously quite appealing, and then just working stuff off of like virtual servers or whatever, you know.
But it, for anything that requires microsecond timing, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, like games. That'd be an idea, wouldn't it? Not to use it for games. Oh, hang on, this is a game thing, isn't it?
Thing is, though, is that, need I say it?
This wouldn't, oh, go on.
This wouldn't be an issue if the Wii U hadn't have done its thing. You wouldn't be having a PlayStation coming out and saying, oh, well, we're going to allow you to play your PS3 and PS4 games on your PS Vita while you're away from the house.
Really?
You think it's just the whole dual screen thing? I don't know.
My thing was actually talking about the concept of actually playing from a TV. So basically removing the TV from console gaming.
I think this is more of a backwards compatibility thing.
Because obviously they've kind of determined not to put the parts in necessary to actually allow for backwards compatibility in order to keep price down. But then obviously they perhaps realise that there are a lot of people who would like to play older games, but they haven't actually...
Hello!
They haven't actually really kind of said how much of the back catalogue for whatever systems are going to be available through PlayStation Now, as far as I can see, or have they said how much is going to be available?
They've been trying very hard not to say much at all.
Because, I mean, they're probably not going to get something like, say, Final Fantasy X and X-2, because of that there's the HD remix of that properly coming out in March, for instance. But older, like, I mean, are we actually going to finally have PS2 games let near the system?
Maybe. I mean, there have been one or two PS2 games released using emulation on PSN, but...
Yeah, we saw those when we were looking through the store a week or so back.
I mean, a recent example would be the Jack and Daxter trilogy. They're on... they were released on PS3 and Vita because, you know, they share a tool chain now because Sony have, you know, suddenly worked out that maybe it's an idea just to make it easier for people to sell things on our things.
Can I just say that I find it slightly ironic how there's so much emphasis in the next generation consoles of better graphics and, you know, this service will actually downgrade your graphics in essence. So it won't be, you know, perfect. It'll be compressed. You know, and yeah. they've said that you will get some compression artifacts and stuff.
Well, the thing is, it has to be compressed extraordinarily quickly because it's got to be it's got to get the signal from whatever's running it, compress the signal, send it over the net, be reassembled on the other side, and then it's got to take account of what you're doing with the controller, send that data back, and then the machine on the other end has to interpret that, render the result, send it, and that's got to be a constant loop, which is why they're saying 5 megabit connection. And the problem with that is, well, remember the whole fuss a few years ago about Killzone 2 on PS3, where people were saying about sluggish controls? And that was because I think it was the slightly odd way they were rendering the screen to do, you know, a lot of the post-processing effects. And as a result, people were going, oh, no, it feels floaty and you're disconnected. Yeah, that's input lag. That's the lag between what you're doing on the controller and the result on the screen. This is going to have input lag. You can't get away from that. You can try and reduce it, but any cloud gaming system where it's running on a remote machine, you're watching the video and it's reading your controls, it's going to have that lag.
Absolutely. I mean, if anybody's wondering, so I have read up on like the specs of the next generation consoles and whatnot. The one glaring factor is that the Wii U actually is meant to have like a much higher Bluetooth level. And that's basically to make sure that the connection speed between the controller and the machine itself is so fast that you don't get any lag like that. But you won't necessarily get that over the internet.
Well, with anything like that, where you've got two machines sitting next to each other, especially when you've got the, you know, the interconnectivity so designed for that, then everything about the lag is, you know, is going to be minimized. It's one machine to another. There's no infrastructure. There's no phone network. There's no local exchange. There's no internet service provider in the way, and there's no NSA. Hello. There's none of that in the way, so it's going to be, you know, quite fast.
Yeah, but I mean, it's I think it's meant to be something like Bluetooth 4.0 or something like that, rather than like Bluetooth 2 or Bluetooth 3.
Yeah. So anything like that, it's going to be quite good. Now, I don't know if it's quite, you know, if the Vita, you know, remote play is as good. I don't know. I've not tried it because I don't have a PS4 and I've only got a few games on the PS3 that are, you know, compatible with remote play.
Yeah.
They have to natively support it. It's not an OS thing. So it's a pain in the ass. So even then, the entire idea of having my, you know, my console upstairs while I play, you know, Ico or Shadow of the Colossus or, you know, whatever downstairs on the Vita doesn't hugely appeal to me. So, yeah, the entire idea of this whole PlayStation Now where everything's remote play.
I just hope that the rollout of the service doesn't lead to neglect of download games on PSN.
I will happily buy a game.
I will
not happily rent the ability to replay it over an internet connection.
Because, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people who don't even have the minimum 5 megabits required for a good experience.
Yeah,
huge swathes of America, which is where they're looking for launching sort of third quarter this year. The UK, still a lot of places don't have that 5 megabits, and we're having to wait until 2015. Yeah, other places, I mean, the only place where things might be pretty much fine is somewhere like Japan or South Korea.
Yeah, where they have insane speeds.
I mean, if you think about it, that's not just like a 5 megabit, you know, just for, you know, kind of going online. That's 5 megabit has to be kind of maintained. So if you're in a public space, for example, when you've got 3G and, you know, people are connecting to different routers and people are using different, you know, levels of bandwidth and whatnot, you're obviously going to go up and down as well, so...
Joe, I think I'm going to move us on to our next story now, which is the... We kind of mentioned Sherlock and Watson earlier. This is not referring to the conclusion of the first series of Moffat's Sherlock, with the Cumberbatch.
There are lots of Sherlocks around at the moment.
It's actually due to the fact that you may not be aware of this, but the copyright on the Sherlock Holmes stories and characters hasn't actually fully expired in certain territories, namely the United States.
That's not an important territory then.
This is because of the fact that the last few sort of stories and books or whatever weren't published until sort of like the early 20s or so.
Yeah.
And because of the way US copyright works, it's not in public domain yet. And there was a judge ruling last week that it was kind of a mixed bag, because he was kind of like, that. It's sort of like, no, a load of it is free, but then some of it isn't. And
yeah.
It's basically general confusion. But an article in The Independent best described the distinction at the moment. And that is, in the US, the term of copyright extends 70 years after the death of the author, or, crucially, 95 years after publication. In short, that means 10 stories remain under copyright until 2022. In the UK, only the 70-year rule applies, so all Holmes stories have been out of copyright since 2000. Now, this is perhaps why, despite the fact that we've got, what was that story where they sort of they've switched representations for Sherlock and it's an American series?
Elementary?
Yes.
That's the one.
Elementary. Well, absolutely. So you've got something like that. I think the only reason they're they probably could have afforded paying several thousand quid to the Doyle estate. But they probably don't have so many problems because of how much they've changed. But the reason some of this sort of case has been brought forward is because there are people that obviously want to do stuff with what Doyle wrote originally. And the fact that even though they might not be using stuff that features in those last 10 novels, which is still under US copyright in the US, it's the fact that they want that the estate was kind of pushing for it as the characters as a whole.
Yeah.
Which,
so everything.
Yeah, so like, which obviously means that no, the characters are still under copyright because you have to include what happens to them in the sort of 10 novels that haven't. Well, 10 stories that haven't gone out of copyright yet. Various things. So, yeah. It makes me think that people who perhaps are looking to do kind of like a Sherlock, like, steampunk comic or something, and they're based in America, that maybe they should rethink that for a moment.
Also, Sherlock steampunk as a concept just makes me a little bit angry.
I think it probably upset a lot of people, to be fair. But, yes, basically, in the UK you can get away with it, but in the US you can't. So, for instance, I can just imagine someone be now perhaps ill-advisedly trying to do, like, a Sherlock steampunk-style comic and put it on Kickstarter.
Yes, it's just Sherlock, isn't it? Everyone can use Sherlock.
Like, it's like, if you're going to do that at the moment, you might want to consider putting sort of, like, several thousand dollars worth of your fundraising goal towards paying off the Doyle estate.
You could just call it Shylock steampunk, which would be slightly different.
Oh.
And might get into different trouble, depending. Incidentally, a little bit of trivia. With Next Generation, you know, they did the Sherlock episodes with Data. That was going to be a recurring theme. That was going to be, you know, they were going to have, like, in an episode a season. But they got into a little bit of a are you going to be using Sherlock as a character in this? Then you might want to have a bit of a chat with us or pay us, which is why there was a long gap between the first two seasons, and they did one with Moriarty much later on in the series. Where I think they came to an understanding with the estate.
An understanding.
Yeah, an understanding. Do you want your understanding in 20s or 50s?
I got to admit, I did like that one episode of Next Generation where basically they thought that Moriarty had actually got out of the holodeck somehow.
Oh, God, that was a weird one.
Yeah.
And it happened. Cool, he was just very smart.
Yeah.
He said, ah. Oh, ow.
Anyway, I mean, this doesn't really affect too much, obviously, the current Sherlocks that are around, i.e. Sherlock Holmes, the Guy Ritchie films, and Elementary.
Which I still have not seen the Guy Ritchie films.
You have not seen the Guy Ritchie films?
No.
Wow, they're actually quite good. I really do quite enjoy them.
I know we were just talking about kind of like Sherlock and steampunk, and they're verging a bit on that. Just a tiny bit. Tiny iffy bit.
In a way.
Robert Downey Jr.'s there, and you're just all forgiven. You know?
Oh, don't make me laugh.
Don't laugh then.
Mean.
Yeah, Mr. Downey Jr. is a bit great in films.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of makes sense that in his version, Sherlock is somebody that, well, put it this way, he's intelligent about everything, not just, you know, about academic type stuff. So he's intelligent about fighting, for example, which is why he can kind of slow down, see where the punches are going to roll, and he can, you know, make a plan of attack.
Yeah, that was in that Sherlock documentary that I saw before last night's episode.
Interesting.
Well, they had that particular clip where he was doing bare knuckle. You know, fighting, and he was like, right, you know, so if I punch the man here, then you know, three broken ribs, and you know, this will impair such and such, and then you know, kick, etc.
What channel was the documentary on?
I think it was BBC4. I think.
So it might be on iPlayer for those interested.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
It was a Beeb one, so...
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next bit of news. So, apparently, the people behind Left 4 Dead have got a new game on the cards.
Is it Left 4 Dead 3?
Sadly, no. It's called Evolve. And it's for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Steam.
Yeah, I do kind of get the feeling that if it could be done on the others, like, you know, PS3, Xbox 360 and Wii U and whatnot, then it should be done on the others as well.
There's nothing to, you know what I mean? So far that it couldn't be.
I mean, graphical...
It's a science fiction shooter where four players hunt down a single player-controlled monster so far. And apparently,
so it's Monster Hunter Co.
Yeah, and apparently it's built on replayability. One assumes in the same way that Left 4 Dead's.
But it kind of reminds me of the versus mode of Left 4 Dead, because there is the option to kind of play as like the monster, which is actually quite cool. You know, just kind of hunting down the survivors and whatnot.
But it's coming out later this year, in theory.
Yeah.
Up until playing the Left 4 Deads, I would have been very about, you know, this description. But I must admit, the amount of replayability, the amount of hours I've sunk into both 360 and PC versions, or not even counting the, you know, the online and versus modes on them, is just a bit silly. And, you know, there's a lot of replayability in them. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm just hoping that they do actually utilize the specialities of the Xbox One and PS4 and Steam in order to do this. Because if they're basically just going, oh yeah, well, it's next gen game, and that's why we're doing it for next gen exclusively, then that's a bit silly, really.
I presume they'll be using a lot more RAM to do a lot more things and keep track of a lot more things.
Larger. Because, I mean, obviously they're responsible for Left 4 Dead, and Left 4 Dead had, like, absolutely tons of infected on the screen at any one point, and this doesn't have anything about, or at least it didn't say anything exclusively about having, like, loads and loads and loads of different, you know, little monsters or whatever.
Or Director AI.
Well, I presume, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's one of the things about the Left 4 Dead games. You've got the Director AI, who's like, hi, you seem to be doing rather well at the moment. let's throw more crap at you, make you suffer. Oh, you're doing badly at the moment. Oh, you've died. Okay, we'll just make it a little bit easier.
Unless you're on, advanced difficulty mode, in which case it's then like, what the heck, I'll throw another tank at you. It's okay.
So, you're in pain, let's put you out of your suffering quicker.
I still remember the one time where we tried getting through a level on expert, and was it the original Left 4 Dead?
Yeah.
And it was the one with the big train yard.
Yes.
And we figured that we could just kind of evade the tank by near the beginning of the train yard by running back into the safe room. And eventually the tank learned this tactic.
We did it a couple of times, then, you know, kind of went through, died, started back. And it's really, really surprised us the one time when we tried the trick again, you know, went out, gone back into the safe room where the tank appeared, you know, tried shooting him from out from inside, you know, when we've got plenty of ammo and whatnot. And then the tank ripped the door off the safe room. And we were like, what? I didn't know this could happen!
That's the best type of thing. When a game surprises you, you think you've got it sussed.
Yeah.
And say, I was just being nice before.
So, yes.
I think after that point, I tried a couple of ones where I basically just tried to peg it to the end.
Yeah.
That didn't work either.
I learned very quickly that the director AI on Left 4 Dead, if you try something, you know, a bit too reckless,
yeah,
it might let you get away with it once or twice, but it, whatever happens at any point, it can just kill you.
Yeah.
It can just end, you know, a full healthy squad of four. With health packs.
There's no longer a healthy squad of four once the director AI's decided otherwise.
But it can just go, that's it. You know, one of you's been done in by a spitter, the other one's, pinned by a hunter. You know, someone's been ridden off by a jockey, you know, all that kind of thing. It's just, they can end you extraordinarily quickly.
This is making me want to play Left 4 Dead again now.
It is a bit, isn't it?
Meanwhile, yep. It's not necessarily making me want to buy a next-gen console and play Evolve. I know I probably wouldn't be able to necessarily get away with it on my laptop. But it's like, it's the first game where I've seen the console that is coming out on next gen that I've felt vaguely warm, fuzzy feelings towards.
Alien Isolation.
No, I haven't felt warm, fuzzy feelings towards that.
Maybe warm feelings in trousers.
Can I just say that
Space Station with it?
I'm kind of hoping that some of these like newer games that are coming out will support the Oculus Rift. Yeah, that's going to be coming out sometime this month, isn't it? Not this month, this year.
Somebody was speculating about like what the costs for the games would be, and they've pointed out that they will probably be above that of regular games, including next gen. What's the next gen? Current new gen. In that, obviously, there's a bit more work involved in trying to sort it out so that it makes full use rather of the hardware involved.
I want to know if Oculus Rift will work with PlayStation Now. Because that will be the ultimate experience in frustration and lag.
and
blockiness and...
And speaking of next-gen in general, maybe we should go on to our sales milestone for the PlayStation 4.
Before we do, can we talk slightly about the Steam boxes that are coming out?
Yeah.
How do we feel about those?
There seems to be a lot of them.
They're just PC. The best way of describing, my opinion of them, is they're not particularly dedicated hardware. They're not running anything that you can't get elsewhere. So it's kind of like, well, if you companies can release a machine with an operating system on, but it has to be from Microsoft or whatever, it's almost like a an extension of the branding of SteamOS rather than as dedicated boxes.
Do you know what the weekend taught me? That if your computer's got a HDMI port in it and, your television's got HDMI,
you can use HDMI.
Yeah, and have the like all the pretty pictures and sound coming out of your telly, and actually potentially looking better because the lighting quality on the telly's better normally.
Did you use Steam Big Picture Mode?
I've tried it, but it's I've only tried it with Skyrim, and unfortunately there was too much screen tearing for my liking.
Well, no, I don't think it was screen tearing.
There was some screen tearing going on, and the refresh rate was ridiculous. The screen refresh rate, it was too low for what was happening, so it was kind of a bit seasick.
I will say that when I played about with it, for some reason Steam Big Picture Mode has its own display settings.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily take into account what you're running at when you launch it. It seems to take into account the screen that you're running it on. So it tries to be a bit clever, which is some of the complaint that people have made about the Steam boxes. But yeah, with the Steam boxes, I really just think it's them saying, look, proof of concept, we can do this. If people like them, then great. And this is a reason why people should think about, running Steam OS instead of Windows.
Well, I mean, I think part of the problem with Steam boxes is that it's trying to fill a gap between the console and PC markets, by having like a box which will definitely run this game.
Mm.
But with the PC games, they kind of, there's not like every single PC game will run on this system.
No, because it is Steam OS, so it has to be Linux.
And with the announcement that later this year we could see Windows 9 unveiled and then see it launched in 2015, there's perhaps a slight chance that Microsoft will once again pull off a Star Trek and have an operating system that's usable again.
Pulling off a Star Trek.
but I want to talk about. I really want to talk about those 4.2 million PS4 units, though.
But I will just tack onto the Steam Box thing there. Mm. That I think this the point of the existence of Steam Boxes as physical machines is more a swipe at Microsoft and what they're doing with Windows 8 and possibly with Windows 9 than anything else. It's not about the consoles. I think it's Steam saying, Valve saying they can do something with Steam without Microsoft if Microsoft, lock up app stores and that kind of thing. We can do something about that. We don't need Microsoft. We just have to convince everyone else that, they don't necessarily either.
And now there's 4.2 million PlayStation 4 units. Sold since launch.
Smooth. But yeah, that's a bloody impressive number. I mean, these new consoles have broken records. So people were obviously very hungry for new, true next-gen machines.
This is in comparison with Xbox One selling just over 3 million in a similar period.
Which is, in itself, that could possibly be a record.
Mm. There we go. I think part of the problem with sales figures is that you can never quite necessarily believe, but you can never quite get the right kind of numbers.
Well, whether it's shipped to stores or sold.
Yeah, there's always kind of, oh, does that mean this or does that mean that? Or, because I think there's one statistic that I saw where it was something along the lines of the Wii U actually sold more than the PlayStation, the Xbox One during a certain period of time, I think the last couple of weeks of December or something like that. But I can't remember whether it was just US, UK, worldwide or what.
I was going to be very unkind and say, was that before the Xbox One launch? But I'm not going to. But yeah, basically, it's the Wii U has done okay in the US, from what I understand, but not stellar. Whereas in the UK, they need to pull their finger out. I mean, I don't think I've seen any advertising on TV over Christmas.
To be fair, I think part of the problem is that it's as people say, with the Wii U, there's confusion over what it is. Is it an add-on for your Wii? Sorry?
Whose fault is that?
Well, yeah.
Anything to address it yet.
That's fair enough, but I mean, you know, if you go into virtually any game shop, video game shop, you will notice that the Wii U section is either dramatically reduced or there's virtually nothing there.
Is there any major territories that the PlayStation 4 hasn't been launched in yet?
Japan.
So yes. Home market. So once that happens, is it going to go a bit crazy?
I've heard it's got quite a few pre-orders.
Mm.
I mean, the whole thing with Japan is, frankly, I don't think Japan is anywhere near as important as it used to be for gaming. Because they've got handhelds and phone games, and a lot of people seem to be very happy with that, and it's been ages since a Japanese game rocked my socks. Really. And I say that in a sad way. It's just a lot of the developers seem stuck in the past.
To be fair, I think in terms of Japanese games, I think a lot of the time I do prefer them over Western games.
But then you play a lot of Nintendo.
Yes, that's very true. But like Japanese RPGs, Final Fantasy in particular, and like Kingdom Hearts and stuff, I do prefer over Western RPGs.
Less the sort of Xbox 360, PS3 sort of Wii generation. My two favorite Japanese games have been Deadly Premonition and Resonance of Fate. So. Obviously, one action game and one RPG.
Okay, which is better, Final Fantasy 13 or Skyrim?
Skyrim.
Come on!
Final Fantasy 13 was just.
It was infuriating because it marks the series as it went wrong. Basically, because you know they tried to stick in as much action as possible, and it really didn't work.
And then you got so little control over everything, and it just made me want to play loads of older games, the strategy, and oh, the friggin' summons that did nothing. Oh,
summons would...
Talk something else. I don't want to dwell on 13.
the PS4 has sold a shit ton, and the Xbox One has sold a little less, but still a shit ton.
I do wonder if the lead is not this, because I thought availability was... Who was meant to have the better availability out of the two?
Well, I think at one point the PlayStation 4 was difficult to find compared to the Xbox One.
I have had a few mates who have been tracking the PS4's availability, because they've been wanting to get hold of one, or they've had friends or family, because they've already got one. Anecdotally, just from a few friends, it's been, they've been walking into shops, do you have PS4s? We've just sold, the last one, or we've got some, coming in a day or two. Do you have any Xbox Ones? Yep, they are, big pal. Now, that could be because it has sold less in the UK than the PS4, which is a big shock, simply because it's nearly £100 more. But it could also be because they haven't launched in as many territories as the PS4 has. I mean, I'm more inclined to believe that it's the price.
But, I mean, you can't exactly turn around and say, oh, well, PS4s have been sold out, therefore it's a better console, because if you remember...
Oh, no, it's not about the better console, it's all about what people's perception.
Yeah, I know, but it's quite interesting because, people will take that argument on the internet. And it'll be like, what about the Wii?
Oh, yeah, but then...
The Wii wasn't necessarily a better console, but it still, sold out for absolutely ages.
It has to be something that people want, just because, I learned very early on in my life that just because something is popular doesn't mean it's any good.
But it's some of the...
And vice versa. Yeah. No one wants to touch it with a shitty stick, it may be the most brilliant thing ever. But people don't get it for some reason.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like the Dreamcast. Lots of people... It's almost become like a cult console, in a way.
It's the Firefly of consoles, killed too soon and bloody brilliant. Imagine what it could have done if it had a longer life.
Time controller, it was amazing. The Dreamcast controller. Oh
I mean, to
God.
Be honest...
I've dreamed about the controller.
This is how I feel about the Wii U. I know that virtually nobody else feels the same way about it, but I really dig the Wii U.
You've got that. Various forms.
Yes, yeah.
I think I'd like to move us on to our feature for this week. In this very gaming-themed episode, this is what happens when I let Paul do the outline. basically, we wanted to talk this week about our worst gaming hang-ups. These are the mechanics and devices used by developers in games that, through their overuse over the years, or the fact that they've just been poorly implemented far too many times,
or just general other reasons why they're bad,
they've managed to generally just piss us off time and time again, or we've had enough.
I mean, there are obviously exceptions to these, and the first one that we've got is escort missions, which, you know, everybody hates.
I want to say two games that are all about escort missions. One does it really well, in my opinion. The other doesn't do it so well. Final Fantasy X, the entire game is pretty much an escort mission, and it does it pretty well. You have a choice over how you approach most situations and how you go through combat, and there's a nice bit of pacing and thoughtfulness and a story that really gets you to think while you still perhaps don't have that much agency. And then there's The Last of Us, which is one great big long escort mission. Very little agency with the narrative, and in some ways quite an in-depth narrative, but you can tell pretty much any time when you're about to enter a kill box whilst you're escorting. And I just want to also point out that the people that join you along your escort are also, a lot of the time, more useless than helpful.
Can I just add to that? Is the fact that I think most of the time it's the fact that they're so useless which frustrates you, but by the same token, Resident Evil 4 was still good. Even though most of that was an escort mission.
The whole thing with Resident Evil 4 is to complete it on professional at least once, so that you can get Ashley in the armour and then just do whatever the hell you want, including letting her almost get chopped up by, like, the
chainsaw.
The chainsaw sisters.
Well, if the El Gigante picks her up.
Oh yeah, it just he, spikes he ends up, in his hand.
Yeah,
and he just drops her. It's great.
And you go, ha ha ha.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm just trying to think of an older game that does an escort mission really well. Blast Corps.
Blast Corps, I wouldn't...
I would call it escort, because you're trying to transport nukes, and you have lots of fun destroying stuff so that it can get through.
I wouldn't necessarily describe it as an escort mission.
I would say it's a cross between an escort mission and a destruction sort of game. But I think basically what I'm trying to say is that out of the two narrative-heavy escort mission games I've played, like games where the main thing is escorting at least a character, 10 beats Last of Us.
Also, technically just thinking that Bioshock Infinite would be an escort mission, except Elizabeth is never in any danger, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird
how she can't get hurt, though.
Looking,
she ends up.
It's not that weird considering anything else that she can do.
Looking at images for this very podcast, actually, I come across, like, I tapped in escort missions, and there was a couple of memes that come up of Elizabeth saying, you know, oh, this is one big, you know, escort mission, and he constantly needs salt and, like, ammo and health to survive, obviously referencing you, so you're the
escort
mission.
True enough, yes, she does far more for you, you don't have to do anything for her, yeah.
But maybe that's why some escort missions do actually work out better, when it's not necessarily just being able to defend the person, but also making it so that it's not too easy to fail in your mission, you know, in a way. If you're busy battling off or fighting off against these enemies, are they okay to kind of just hide somewhere, or, you know, are they going to be out in the open being shot as well?
With escort missions, I always have terrible, terrible flashbacks to playing Wing Commander on PC. where you'd have a multi-part mission where you've got to escort this ship, whether it's, you know, a big ship or a small ship, you know, through enemy territory and, you know, make sure that, you know, nothing untoward happens to it. And then failing at the last hurdle where there's just slightly too much damage to the ship and just go, oh, your mission failed, you've got to do all that again. And I think, yeah,
I
just want to go and cry now in the corner.
I just remembered some of the most annoying escort missions I have played, and they were back in the day in Morrowind. There was a couple of quests, like minor ones, where you would escort people, but due to obviously the game being as old as it was, or on the tech that it was at the time, you would have problems with characters following you.
Mm.
So they'd get stuck somewhere.
Oh, God.
And yeah, there'd be like a time limit, and before you know it, you've just realised that somewhere between where you last looked behind you and where you are now, the person you're escorting is probably running around in small circles.
You know, I think to a certain extent we have to differentiate escort missions between narrative ones and gameplay ones, because gameplay ones, obviously, I would say that Final Fantasy X is a narrative escort mission, but it isn't a gameplay escort mission because you can defend
people just follow you and they just join the party.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, basically, it's
and you can do stuff and you can make
exactly
do stuff.
So that you're not escorting, you know, technically within the game mechanics, you're doing it via the story. Which is...
Meanwhile, the Last of Us is both.
I'm just thinking...
It makes me disappointed at both.
Dead Rising.
Oh.
There you go. That's escort missions with dodgy AI.
Oh, God. They were just so useless.
Well, let's go from one... I've managed to get rid of the zombies that were attacking you. So let's go, you know, through that door, through a loading screen, into the next area. Let's do that. Oh, you're not with me. You've not followed me for some mysterious reason. Right, I'm going to have to go through the door, loading the screen, into the other area. You're dead!
And there's more zombies.
Well, fine, you can stay dead. I'm bloody going home.
And the zombies were back, one assumes. See, that was the one thing that annoyed me about certainly the first Dead Rising. So it's like, I'm in a mall. Well, the doors, you know, there can only be so many zombies. And yet, we kept having loads of freaking zombies. Like, the numbers of zombies that got into that place, it wasn't possible. I would have liked it if the general population of zombies, if you solidly, for 2 days, just killed zombies in that game, you could perhaps actually thin them out almost completely.
Which was a gameplay mode you could do, and there was an achievement.
But how hard was it to get to that gameplay mode?
You had to complete it on a certain level, and possibly achieve certain things in it.
Yeah.
And I never quite did it, but there is a reference to that achievement in Left 4 Dead.
Hmm.
Where there's one of the missions in the safe room, and it's got, you know, all the messages that have been scrolled by other survivors.
Hmm.
And it says, you know, I scored, you know, I killed a dozen or something like that. And there's one that says, I killed 59,000, such and such, such and such. And it's got underneath, liar, underlined. That's how many zombies you have to get to get the achievement in the original Dead Rising.
Okay, moving from one zombie game to another. Resident Evil series, it's quick time events.
Yeah, oh, Jesus Christ.
Into it. Yes.
I mean, it's not the only game that does it, but...
But the introduction of QuickTime events into the Resident Evil series since... I'm assuming there weren't any in 3.
There were choices that you could make in 3.
But there weren't QuickTime events.
I don't think it was QuickTime events as we know them now.
The introduction of QuickTime events into 4... Perhaps... when 4 was released, quick time events were still... They've been around for a bit, but they hadn't been used that much.
Mm.
Yeah.
So generally, it was kind of annoying when it happened, especially the whole Krauser freaking knife fight.
Yeah.
That happens.
Oh, like,
if you make a mistake once during that entire fight, and you have to...
Well, no, you get there's like a very long bit. You have to get to that point, and then it just resets to that point
mm.
before you'll like die. and have to, yeah. And it was just kind of, it was just so bloody long. It was just, you know, it was a quick, you know, button response after button response, button combo response or single button response after another and another and another for ages.
Why, I'm just thinking Just Cause 2.
What was that like?
Boss fight at the end where it's, you have to do certain things to get into a, like a compound, like a bunker. And then it's just quick time, you know, press X, press A, press Y, press right. Otherwise, you have to do the whole thing again.
I mean, wasn't Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit was like, it was a bit weird. It had quick time stuff going on. I mean, to be honest, almost all the controls were based off of a weird combination of quick time. And it's something, I mean, I haven't played Heavy Rain yet. It's on, yeah. You know, it's waiting for me to play on it, but yeah. It also, but Beyond Two Souls certainly continued with the use of QuickTime.
Oh, but it doesn't have QuickTime. David Cage said so at Eurogamer Expo.
He's lying.
Yeah, he was a bloody liar.
He was lying a lot. He was lying an awful lot. But at the same time, I wasn't too annoyed with the QuickTime in Beyond Two Souls. Like, there were a couple of bits where I was finding it difficult to get the controller to do what they wanted in-game.
Mm.
Like, sometimes when it was asking me to actually move the controller on, you know, use the whole six axis. Is it the six axis? The gyro-type stuff on the controller.
Yeah, six arses.
to get it to do things. So, that, you know, that got frustrating times. But a lot of the time it felt quite natural. The way they'd done it, because the controls that it was trying to get you to do, they weren't flashing in your face and trying to draw unnecessary amounts of attention to them. And, like, the points where you'd have to retry tended to be quite generous.
Yeah.
Like, if you did fail. Or you could fail quite a few times and nothing bad would happen. You just, like, you know, she'd just get a little bit more sort of debilitated, but nothing major, and you could just try again.
Yeah. A few things worked. With you know, QuickTime. The first time I encountered, you know, QuickTime events is Dragon's Lair. Where it was 50 pence a go per credit on the arcade machine. Jesus Christ, that was expensive at the time. That was five times the, you know, the cost of credits on any other arcade game I played. And it was a pain in the ass. But it was necessary, seeing as it was playable. You know, it was playing animation clips from Laserdisc in the machine. So, you know, that's what, you know, it had to be QuickTime because you couldn't control anything other apart from at these particular junctions.
Yeah.
So and I
don't know. I think, you know, it should have gone when Laserdisc games went. And surely the thing that should have sounded the death knell to anyone who had any sense with these, you know, idea, let's put a QuickTime event in, would be zero punctuation. With him, you know, coming up with the description of the demo for Heavenly Swords, where it was press X to not die, which is pretty much, apart from, you know, as you say, with, you know, Beyond Two Souls and things like that, where, you know, just an outcome can be different. If you're looking at an instant fail, that's what they're doing. It's just press X to not die. Why would you do that in a game? We play games to actually be able to, you know, change outcomes and achieve things. I don't particularly say, oh, you know, working out, you know, seeing the prompt on the screen and knowing instinctively which button to press in the controller fast enough to not die is a gameplay mechanism.
I think the QuickTime event usage that annoyed me the most in the past year for a game is what happened in Resident Evil 6.
Yeah, where it's like two...
Because
I thought that was just Resident Evil 6 annoyed you.
I mean, it's because not only were you normally in scenarios where you would have been doing some actual avatar movement prior to the QuickTime prompt,
yeah,
because you would have been sort of thinking about the movement, camera angles weren't being favourable, so you're really thinking about the movement, but suddenly it would switch to you having to press some quick time buttons. And it was because of the sort of this disjoint of what you're doing to suddenly asking you to do something else, and you would die so much. Or then it would happen so suddenly it'd be over, and then you'd have to quickly try and reorientate how you're pushing the character through the level in order to continue on from running away from whatever Nasty's after.
Yeah, absolutely.
The camera angles are not a new complaint with Resident Evil as well, is it?
4 was reasonable, as was 5. 6, suddenly it just went all to pot.
I think the point was is that you not only had to actually do the button bashing, which is all well and good, but you have to actually control where your character goes as well. And that
bash X to not die.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's push tap X to not die, as long as you're doing it in the right direction and you're both doing it. because it's based on, you know, kind of two-player experience, it basically means that if you're playing a single-player game going all the way through, it's far easier for you because the computer player doesn't die, during quick-time events, and the computer player doesn't die during normal gameplay. Also, the computer player doesn't take ammo from you, so you've got far more resources.
But that's not a quick-time event issue.
Yeah.
That's just Resident Evil 6 being annoying as hell.
Yeah.
That's just the Resident Evil 6-ness creeping in.
Okay. Mechanic, that is...
Hang on. Okay. One final thing with QuickTime.
Okay, go.
Imagine what that's going to be playing over a streaming service like PlayStation Now with added lag. Where it's, I know for certain I pressed X to not bloody die in time, but the video I'm receiving and me pressing X on the controller is slightly out of sync with the communication between server and home, and it's just killed me. Yeah, another reason I don't like the cloud.
Okay. Another thing that's a pain in the ass. Losing.
And it's a valid reason as well.
Losing and reacquiring abilities.
Hello, Metroid.
Yeah. I was thinking of Metroid when I thought that.
Oh, I seem to be completely kick-ass and I can do anything. Shit.
I mean, they always come up with story reasons as to why it happens, but it just happens so often.
I have thought, ages ago, if someone was going to do a game-based sitcom, you would have a recurring, thing happening to a character, a bit like Kenny in, South Park. And it would just be, Samus Aran would always lose all her abilities just before something really important that, could have been, I could have done that just now.
She could lose her armor in her sleep.
We just have to get up there. It's about 200 feet up. And get through the energy barrier by shooting, the 5 locks at once. Oh, that'll be no problem. Shit, me armor's just fell off.
I'm just trying to think of other games, because who else has done it other than Metroid?
Well, technically going between games, it kind of annoys me. Like, say, for example, Final Fantasy X. You power level all the way up to level 100. In the next game, Yuna's weak as shit.
I mean, part of the reasoning for
it's all the voice work and singing that she's done.
Well, but there is a slight in-game logic for that, because they kind of talk about how spheres have lost their ability between the games because of the destruction of the fire plane.
True.
I hope that isn't a spoiler for anyone, because come on. Seriously.
Yeah.
That game's over 10 years old now.
I mean, it kind of makes sense for most Zelda games anyway, as well.
Well, they're all sort of slightly alternate world.
Apart from the going from Ocarina of Time to Majora's Mask, in which case, why is his health so low all of a sudden?
Yeah, there's that.
I would like it to be finally revealed in Zelda that not only is Link, a reincarnation of a hero at all times, there's perhaps a genetic lineage, and at some point genetic memory comes into play, and he'll remember how to do all those awesome sword attacks. You won't have to go around learning new sword skills.
Well, one of the theories about the Zelda timeline is that the wolf from Twilight Princess is actually the Link from Majora's Mask that couldn't actually find his way back home.
Oh, that's just too sad.
If you want to know sad, go watch Game Theorists. theories about Majora's Mask. Because there's one that where it's like Majora's Mask is basically him accepting death. That's the entire game is Link accepting death. And it's very convincing as well. It's like, oh my god.
I think what's happened there is Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite is just, you know, flitting about with Link and just moving him from reality to reality, and he invents the memories. To accept a new reality. That's what that is.
I'm going to head to on another qualm. Obligatory badly made minigames. Those minigames you're made to play.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that came to mind, admittedly, although I love the game dearly, Final Fantasy VII, what the hell with all of those minigames?
Who knows?
Chocobo Racing, while potentially interesting, was a pain in the ass to do, and you are forced to do that at least once.
Which is why
they actually did the game. I mean, you know, there was a Chocobo Racing game on PS1. Yeah. Which is like, what?
But I mean, we're differentiating between those type of badly made minigames and the very, very well done type minigames like Triple Triad or Blitzball.
I could not get on with it.
Exclusive in Final Fantasy territory here at the moment. just to bring out the other Final Fantasy minigame, which just fudges over Sphere Break in 10-2, is just a pain. You have to play it at one point, and it is just such a pain in the ass to get your head around. It's like, can't we just be playing regular Blitzball? And then they gimped Blitzball in favour of Sphere Break, and it was just like, you fudges. Why?
I mean, I quite liked the minigames, or the minigame from Bioshock, which was, you know, when doing the hacking and you're rotating the the unlocking the kind of squares and whatnot.
But then that was, I have played games like that on the 8 and 16 bits.
Yeah.
As games. Those were the games.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were good. So yeah, I quite like the, you know, the hacking minigame. Not so much the hacking method in, it made more sense in, you know, in Bioshock 2.
The hacking system in Fallout 3, I don't know if it was like any of the previous games, and I can't remember New Vegas that well because I've had to expunge most of New Vegas from memory. But it always annoyed me because I could never quite figure out, like, I'd have to retry things a lot for hacking.
That one falls into the category of it makes sense in the world, but it was still a bit annoying. Yeah, that was the one with finding words in the hex code, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it's saying, oh, three characters. No, we're correct. Four, we're wrong. You've got three attempts left.
Yeah, and then I always save it most of the time before hacking because I often have to restart and unlock myself out of systems.
Yeah, but then if you didn't do all four attempts, you could just start again.
Yeah, I would do that if I thought there was a chance, but you know, it's just the whole, is there a chance that I'm going to do it? You'd still want to save beforehand in case you thought.
It would do all the saves when you went through it all. Oh yeah, that's part of a gripe for me. Another one, so I'll get onto that.
But I'm trying to think, because there was another mini game on one quite popular game. I can't remember what it is exactly, but it's, I think it's like a car racing one, but it wasn't done very well.
There was a racing one in, it's maybe not the one you're thinking of, but there was a racing mini game in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Oh
dear. And you had to do that to get a character, you know, to get access to the rest of the game. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't just skip that part. You had to do this race. It wasn't great.
Do you know one of my things that I get fed up with in games as a concept, as a thing, as a mechanic that's used?
Death. Go on.
Character death. Like, not like narratively death, but like when you're playing and you run out of health apparently and you die.
That is a weird holdover from arcade games.
They don't need it anymore.
Yeah, I saw there were... You know, remember the cel-shaded Prince of Persia?
Yes.
That they did. And there were so many people complaining about the, oh, but you can't die in that. So, it's, you can't die in a game anyway. The only games I can think of where you could actually die as a character properly would be things like Steel Battalion, where no matter how many hours you'd sank into it, if you were killed in your mech, it would delete your save.
Wow.
We're not talking about, you have to restart this, you know, this particular part of the world you've gone to. Well, why? That's just arbitrary.
Can I just say that I actually found Zombie U actually quite refreshing in that basically the character that you play as once, literally. You die with that character and what they've got on them disappears.
Yeah.
You know, the character that you're playing as, although you're not given much characterization other than a name, gender, and kind of facial features and an occupation.
Yeah.
But it's still like, you know, if you kind of somehow got attached to that character and they died, they were gone.
Oh, but then there was also like, if you is it survival mode on Zombie U? There's one mode where
yes.
You can play, and when you die, you're dead. Then you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the game.
Yeah, there's no kind of other people to kind of pick up from where you left off. You play as the guy, you know, originally, and you know, once you're dead, you're dead. One life, literally, that's it.
Which is fine as a game mode.
Hmm.
If that had been the game, it would have annoyed the hell out of me.
Yes.
Not that I've played it yet, but...
But I'm just saying that there's a lot of games that still use death as a thing, and it's like, there's no point in you using death, unless you're going to make a narrative point out of it. There's no point in having it as a mechanic.
Yeah, because the machines don't have coin slots. So there's no point in having a death in a game now, because that was always so you could put another 10 or 20 pence in the arcade cabinet. So if you die 3 times and you're fine, it will send you back to, you know, to the same room. But if you die a 4th time, it will send you back to the title screen. Why? What's the point of that?
Can I just say, one thing that really frustrates me is when games are difficult, but they're difficult because of unresponsive controls rather than the actual difficulty of the game itself.
Yeah, well, it's not you. That's the failure.
Yeah.
In the it's you know, I did press that bloody button, but I pressed X to not die, and still died.
I mean, the one thing that reminds me of that is War of the Worlds.
Oh God.
is that the Xbox Live?
Yes. Yeah. I reviewed that. It was like somebody tried to argue, oh, it's because you're a puny human and you're not meant to have super strength, blah blah this, blah blah that, so you can't run fast and it's going to be laggy when you do. And it's like, no, if you, when I decide as a person in real life to I might not be able to jump very far, but when I decide to jump, I jump when I decide to jump.
It's almost like there's too many frames of animation before you actually take in that jump
and
or something.
It made the game almost impossible to complete because you were having to account for this lag all the time. And considering most of the game was like just dodging enemies and hazardous environments, it wasn't helpful.
Yeah, you're telling their character to do something, not consider doing it sometime soon.
Yeah. Like, do it now. You need to dodge this thing now in order to avoid the death.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
I mean, I think there have been one or two other platform games that have been similar, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Me with platforms, I tend to not remember platformers because most of the time I have bad experiences with them.
Thinking their unresponsive controls, would the physics in Little Big Planet count? I'm wondering.
Maybe. I've only played one Little Big Planet, and that was one of the ones made for just PSP.
I think that one did have quite sluggish controls, unresponsive.
I can remember being infuriated with it when I was playing it for review. I think people just shouldn't give me platformers for review. Bad idea. If the controls are unresponsive and it's a platformer, I'm going to be severely pissed. Because I don't like platformers that much. I can just about bear to maybe play Mario sometimes. I do like Kirby's various incarnations.
Yeah.
That's about it. Oh, and I love Paper Mario. But that's because it has a narrative that allows me to ignore the niggling bits of gameplay I don't like. But, I'm just trying to think. Repetitive, run-inspired gameplay. Something repetitive. I think something that I feel that falls into that is in the actual like design of the environments.
Mm.
If they make it, if a game is made too obvious that you're about to enter an area where you will be ambushed by enemies.
Are you thinking of anything in particular here?
There's several games guilty of this. Obviously, the more recently played by me, The Last of Us was quite guilty of this. But the Mass Effect games.
Mm.
All of them are quite guilty of that, like just kind of presenting you various where you're like, huh, I'm probably going to be attacked in a moment. Mm,
there's lots of cover in here.
Yes.
I've got to admit, Mass Effect, the original, even though I loved it to bits, the bits where you kind of go onto a planet and you go into kind of some sort of shack and the layout's the same and, you know,
everything was built from the same kit. They bought it from the same company. Yeah. That was it.
Which kind of makes sense, but by the same token, Edge really frustrated me. It's like,
see also Dragon Age 2.
Dragon Age 2 is a severe case of that.
But yeah, well, everyone's bought the caves from the same company.
So it is annoying when games let you know inadvertently when you're about to end up probably dying, depending on how bad the area is designed for, in terms of whether or not it favours you not dying. Mm.
Well, now, thinking that, would that count, or would you be, you know, nice and, you know, let them off? Would that count games where they have very specific save points? So, you know, just before you enter this big wasteland, there's a save point.
That's not so bad.
And another thing that really gets me in the game is anything that's unskippable. Little animation sequences that you know, when you've seen them a dozen times, unskippable deaths. Anything like that where it just seems to be, it's the, you know, developer saying, look, we've done something and it's pretty and don't you want to look at it? And say, you're keeping me from the game.
Cutscenes.
Cutscenes
everywhere.
And with cutscenes, yeah, I sometimes want the story, but for God's sake, if, you know, I've seen it X amount of times anyway, let me skip it. But it would be nice if they were pausable.
That actually, yeah, because some of them are bloody long.
Some of them are bloody long, and I have a habit where I'll be desperate to go for a piss. And I've just got to the end of this gameplay sequence, and then a cutscene comes on, and it's just, can I pause this cutscene, or if I press start, will it skip the cutscene, in which case, I've missed that cutscene. I don't know what the hell's going on now. So, anything where it's just, you know, please, if I want to skip something, give me the option to skip it. Burnout crashes would be a fantastic example of that. So, yes, my car looks very pretty as it's car wheeling through the air with, you know, bits of glass and car spraying, you know, all around it. You know, brilliant. Yes, it looks really nice. But that's the third time I've crashed in this particular race and I just want to get it done. Let me skip that scene.
I just want to interject button timing for combos on beat-em-ups.
A bit like QuickTime. As well,
a little bit, yeah, but it's like Mortal Kombat and stuff. When you're trying to do combos in that, it's really a nightmare.
Overcomplicated controls,
yeah.
Why have you done that? Simply, why have you done that? Why do I have to press X and Y at the same time, or A and Y? So I have to try and either press it with two separate buttons, or lean across the the pad and try and only get those.
It's not just that, but I mean, it's when you kind of, yeah, have to do like a special move in the combo somewhere, and it just doesn't come off because the timing's just ever so slightly out by a millisecond.
And just one, I think, final one, trying to squeeze in here. And it's probably something that's becoming more endemic with the generation that's just been released.
Definitely.
But not having the same console multiplayer.
Especially where an online multiplayer component has been created.
It's kind of defeating the point of having a console.
I mean, yes, there is this push towards online, but by the same token, sometimes people like to get together in the same house or on the same console and play together.
In the same room, ironically.
A fantastic example of this is Halo.
Hmm.
Now, from the very first game on the original Xbox, it had split-screen multiplayer where you could play through the entire campaign from start to finish.
Oh yeah, we tried that once.
Now, me and Mrs. Me, Mrs. Retroid, have played through every single Halo game split screen. Now, I played them separately, but with a few of them, we have actually just played them. It's Halo Reach. I have not played through single player. I've just played through, you know, co-op.
Hmm.
And that's a fantastic way to play a game. So, why in hell, you know, with this move to, you know, online multiplayer, fine, offer, you know, cooperative play online, but what happens if you're just sitting in the same room? You have to have two consoles and with two TVs. In the case of Xbox Live, two Xbox Live Gold subscriptions, just so you can play something, you know, cooperatively with someone who's in the same room with you.
But, I mean, the four-player matches have been going on since the days of the N64, you know, kind of regularly.
Yeah,
and you know, some of those are my best memories in gaming, you know, actually having three other friends around and playing on the same system. Not just having like person next to me playing against random people on the internet. I mean, that can be fun as well, but you want the option to be able to basically sit three friends down.
The lack of console multiplayer or same console say co-op is why I haven't played Dead Space 3 yet.
Mm. I was really excited, when it was like, hey, yeah, you can play this two-player, and it's like, yay! And then I realised that it was like, yeah, you can play it two-player as long as the other person is on the internet.
Yeah, and no. Oh, fantastic. You just missed the point of cooperative play right there.
Absolutely.
Now, with me saying about that and Halo 4 is a brilliant encapsulation of that stupidity, because you can play through the campaign entirely split screen. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, have you heard of Spartan Ops?
Yes.
Which is the sort of it's kind of multiplayer, but it's got a narrative story going through it.
Yes, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, tiny problem with that. We've been playing through Halo 4 split-screen co-op. We'll have a go on Spartan Ops, shall we? Oh, your account doesn't have the proper permissions. You don't have Xbox Live. You have to have Xbox Live subscriptions in order to play Spartan Ops, even though you can play them split-screen. It's incredibly stupid. So there's a game mode where it's kind of multiplayer, but you have missions to do, and you can play them, you know, co-op. So it would be perfect for me and my wife, but we can't actually play them, and it doesn't allow you to play System Link. It doesn't allow you to play offline. If you try playing offline, it would just say nope. You know, you need to connect your console to, you know, the internet in order to play this online, connect to the live servers. So there's no actual reason I can think of where it would need that. And another fantastic example, with you saying about Left 4 Dead earlier.
Mm. Yeah.
Those both offer split screen on, you know, 360.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're fantastic, again, to, you know, to play like that. So, you know, could you imagine how idiotic it would be that you'd need Xbox Live subscriptions and, you know, two consoles.
Mm.
It would be pain, yeah.
To do that, it would be idiotic, but we're talking about Microsoft here, where they've obviously thought, you know, Halo 4, you know, one of our flagship products, we're throwing all this money at it. If people want to play multiplayer, sod LAN gaming, which is how, you know, multiplayer on Halo, you know, was a big thing, because the multiplayer on the original Halo, Xbox Live wasn't around. It was you know, split screen and LAN playing only. But let's just ignore that, and we'll just have it, you know, online, so it requires our, you know, payment system.
I have to say that with Left 4 Dead, I would have loved it if you could actually play four player on a console rather than just two. And yeah. Then you could, that way you could have like eight players all together just using two consoles and two TVs. You can like hook them up.
I mean, one thing which was pretty damn good was when my sister-in-law and her boyfriend were down last year.
Mm.
We've got two 360 consoles in this in the house, because, you know, one's mine and one's my wife's.
Yeah.
So we borrowed a copy of Left 4 Dead 2 of a friend and popped it in the other console, and that allows for, not only was it split screen, but it also allowed for, you know, LAN play.
Yeah.
So we had a full four-person team.
Nice.
Playing through some of the, you know, campaigns on that.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, someone wasn't getting, because they're PlayStation gamers and they were a little bit unused to the controls.
Oh, yeah.
And there were occasions where one of them would get stuck, and there was one moment, I won't say who it was, but this particular person got, you know, I can't move, and I don't know why. So we just found where they were, you know, put our flashlights on, and it turned out they were standing in a bath. They'd managed to jump into the bath, and because they hadn't realised, you know, they jumped into it because it was dark in the particular room, and they didn't have their torch on. They were running around in a bath. And it was just, this is a beautiful thing to see. This is absolutely amazing. You know, this survivor who's, you know, survived all these zombies is now running around in a bath. Getting, I can't move! Anyway, yes. But, we need split screen co-op.
There is one aspect of split screen when it's done, though, and it's not done quite right, that does annoy me, and that's when it doesn't have a horizontal window option. It takes up, but like, as TVs have gotten wider, rather than, you know, so you end up with either, like, gaps either side of the split screen, or it forces vertical on you. I think Borderlands is actually perhaps another.
And vertical split is not good.
And it's like, no, I want a proper horizontal split, because, funnily enough, that's what I see through my eyes anyway. That's why we have widescreen.
Well, it's not just that, but you're more likely to have enemies coming from the side than from coming on above, in general.
Yeah. So having it restricted with a vertical split is a horrible thing.
Have to say.
Have
to say, I think it would be quite cool to have like four-player Borderlands at some point. So obviously that can do that.
Split screen.
Yeah, four player split screen Borderlands.
On the same
console. I've got that. No, it's in Xbox Live. I don't have a gold subscription because you must be joking. Especially after getting PlayStation Plus, with the they're showering me with games I want every month, and yours giving me something I played 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You're not selling your service to me anymore, Mr. Microsoft.
It's not just that, but it's the fact that they're actually taking away services from you if you don't, you know, keep on subscribing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the like 4OD and stuff.
Although, to be fair to PlayStation Plus, if your PlayStation Plus, if my plush PlayStation Plus lapses, then any of the games I've got on my account are rendered demo.
All right.
If they're, you know, if they're PlayStation Plus games, if you bought them with a discount, they're yours. But yeah, you can't just have a month of PlayStation Plus, download everything on it, and let it lapse because the games won't be full.
That's fair enough.
So yeah, they've each got their own little issues, but I can let PlayStation Plus off more with that than I can Xbox Live Gold with the, oh, you're not allowing me to use 4OD or Internet Explorer because I don't have, you know, Xbox Live Gold.
I think Emily wants to...
I was just going to say, I'll shut up.
Yeah, I think this is all we've got time for this week. Very much so. I think we've perhaps...
overstayed our welcome?
Exercised some demons this week, perhaps.
And there are even more demons locked away.
I'm sure the generation that's just launched will find more demons with which to annoy us as well.
Probably micro-content and freemium.
Yeah. But that's all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
It's goodnight from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can find NerdAssemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as NerdAssemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com. We're definitely back into the swing of things now that everyone's kind of, you know, gotten over all their New Year's hangovers. That is all.
Yeah. And Lurgy.
And Lurgy, yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Quick time.
For sex.